Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code program.
Hi.
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 Hi. Well, we've been married for 11 and a half years, and it's possible that last night conversation hit an all-time low.
We had a bath together. Can we say that?
Yes. And I just want to point out that this was a chatty bath. This is something that we do. There's no erotic association to us having a bath together, which is underlined by the fact that Sarah has a bath pillow, which looks like a medicinal object that nobody under the age of 80 would use.
What color would you describe it as being?
Off-white.
Oh, I think that's generous.
Yeah.
If you say off-white, I think of like some fabulous Pharaoh and Ball paint color that you might use. This is like...
the ceiling in a heavy smoker's house.
Yeah, but I really like the neck support it gives me while I'm bathing.
So it's not a sensual object.
No.
Neither is the act for anybody, I don't think, of lowering yourself into a hot bath.
But then I'm thinking we run a very, 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 very hot bath and then both get into it going, ow, 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 ow. And then your balls touch the water and then you have to get out and then you have to attempt again and maybe on your fourth try.
My balls are very much the canary in the coal mine of the hot bath.
Because they're probably your tenderest part.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in this bath and we like having a chatty bath. It's almost like a marital meeting, a confab. And I think usually we don't struggle with things to say to each other. But last night suggests otherwise because I found myself saying, after a silence... do you like sneezing?
You did a huge sneeze.
Mm.
And then you went, do you like sneezing?
Now, can I tell them what your answer was?
Yeah.
It was save it for the podcast.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And I wanted to know, is your thinking, we had Russell T. Davis
mm-hmm.
on last week's episode,
uh-huh.
and that created a bit of a storm. There was something he said that was in the press the world over. So perhaps we'll get an influx of new
it's
listeners.
It's not a big deal that the podcast made news. It doesn't matter. Stop talking about it. Jeff, stop it.
So was your thinking that we're going to get this influx of new listeners? Let's save the gold for them.
Pretty much. I think it's interesting to talk about whether or not a person enjoys a sneeze.
I can enjoy the physical sensation of a sneeze. What I don't like is the temporary loss of control.
You will often do a sneeze and then the clear out after the sneeze is, I think, the most intense physical activity that you tend to participate in a day. Does that sound fair?
So you're saying sneezing is my exercise?
It's how you get your heart rate up.
Now we should tell them about this week's guest.
Hey, Hollywood.
Because he's from the big time.
He is the big time. He is Hollywood.
I was thinking that when he, as he invariably does, goes into Netflix for a meeting, it's always the best meeting room.
Yeah.
The pastries on the table, different level to what most people get.
I wonder if it's more like, what kind of juice would you like? And then you get like a cold press that's only spinach
yes.
and lemon,
yes.
and they don't dilute it with the apple, which is what I think those people are doing.
I once spoke to somebody who worked at a startup where, as well as a drinking tap of purified water,
uh-huh.
they had a kombucha tap.
Fabulous. Do you know how good that is for your gut? This is the moment where I remember that I'm going to get into kombucha for spring. I'm getting into kombucha for spring. It's been on my to-do list since early March. It really has.
So anyway, this guy, he's getting the kombucha, he's getting a cold press. They don't keep him waiting in reception.
No.
Because he is the showrunner of Narcos, but he is here to talk about Griselda, starring Sofia Vergara, which came out this year.
And we get into a little bit the thing that he's working on currently, which has Bob in it.
Yeah,
it's
Bob.
Not a big deal, it's just Bob.
Bob.
It's just featuring Bob.
Bob.
De Niro.
Our guest later is Eric Newman.
I was on a bus this week and I saw on another bus an advertisement for Taylor Swift's Eras Tour, which I did not know was available to me on Disney Plus. And that's what I decided to watch.
Because we thought about going and seeing this at the cinema, didn't we?
I did not know when we were thinking about going to see it that it was 3.5 hours long. But what a smart move for all her diehard fans.
And speaking of her fans, I really don't want to enrage the Swifties.
No, we don't want to enrage the Swifties.
Because from what I understand, the Swifties are like the mafia and the Scientologists in that they get a whiff of something and they'll come after you.
We support Taylor Swift's success. We wish her every success.
So first thoughts and then we'll dive a little deeper.
One of the most dramatic things that I thought watching this, Taylor Swift doing a 3.5 hour performance doesn't sweat.
Because you very much do sweat.
I have had people come up to me concerned about my sweating. But it's a very healthy thing. The body is cooling itself.
So tell us more about Eras.
It's so superior to the live experience for me. So to me, here's what it's antithetical to. You know, sometimes you'll be at the cinema and in the previews, they'll be like, and coming next month. And it's like, you can watch a film version of this play at the National. To watch a play live is hard enough as it is. To then watch a filmed version of that seems psychotic. I don't know who these people are, but I imagine they're very, very old and they don't live in a city. And to me, the filmed concert experience is the exact opposite. So I don't love going to concerts, but I am curious, what is the deal? And so getting to watch when Beyonce does Homecoming, what other ones have I watched? Super Bowl halftime shows. I like a filmed version of a live pop star experience.
A thing that I can sometimes have is a concert film feels too detached from the live experience for me.
Oh no. Those people can get stampeded. That's what I think. Like when I was watching this Eras Tour, the people who are right up in that pit, they could die.
When was the last time you heard of a stampede at a pop concert?
I don't know, but I think that someone could fall over and die and it would never even make the news. I wonder if they should keep that shit out of the news because I don't understand.
Well, you're the BBC. A story comes in about a stampede at a Sugar Babes concert.
The story doesn't leave the arena because what happens is if we all really knew how many people were dying on the ground for those things, no one would go to concerts anymore. I bet it happens 3 times a year and we never hear about
it. Okay, so let's talk
because the entire market would crumble.
Okay, let's talk through the mechanics of this. So the person who's been stampeded is proclaimed dead. Do they then shut the doors and there's some kind of announcement that we as a group must never speak of this to anyone?
No one knows this person is dead except for like 3 people and they get like millions of pounds to never speak. If someone said to me, you see that lady who died next to you, who's probably like petite, you can have $10 million if you never acknowledge her death, I would take it in a heartbeat.
So say I was stampeded to death at an Elbow concert. So then Guy Garvey's representation come to you and mm-hmm. say, here's a check. If anybody says what happened to Jeff.
Heart attack. I'm already ready.
Right.
Give me my money.
Right. Okay. So to summarize, you prefer a filmed concert to a live concert because of your fear of the stampede.
No, that's just a point I care to make.
Can we move things back onto Taylor Swift? Tell me about how you found her as a performer.
Okay, so I wish her well. I support her global domination. What fascinates me about her is get that lady behind a guitar and I am in. Once she is not anchored by the guitar or the piano, I feel she is a phenomenally uncomfortable stage presence.
I'm going to come out and say the same thing about Paul McCartney.
Oh, interesting.
Give him a guitar, give him a piano, give him the other Beatles, great performer. Strip him of that Andy's doing a lot of finger pointing, air guitar. He's like a dad at a disco.
So you're saying you can be one of the greatest performers of all time and still be actually a terrible performer?
If you haven't got your right prop, if you haven't got the thing that gives you your superpowers. And I think for some of these people, that is a musical instrument.
Yeah.
So overall, given that you're a Swiftie ally and not a Swiftie yourself, sure, would you recommend it?
No, I don't think I would. But not because it wasn't good, only because the people who listen to this podcast who would watch this have watched it. And the people who won't watch it, why would you watch it? And I wish her the very best and continued successes.
This week, I watched This Town, which is the new show from Stephen Knight, the creator of Peaky Blinders, which, to my shame, I never got into. I think initially I had it in my head it was like a Victorian Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. Uh-huh. So I took against it. And then I had this barber who I really didn't like, who would go on and on and on about it. So I thought, fuck that guy, I'm not watching it. Mm-hmm. Which really is cutting off my nose to spite my face, because I believe it's excellent. Anyway, This Town is set in 1980s Coventry.
Okay.
Here's something I've come to know about myself. Uh-huh. If it's set in the US, I can go glossy 80s. I can see yuppies on Wall Street. If it's set in the UK, it has to be miners' strike, riots, mass unemployment, civil unrest. That's all I want to see in this country in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So this is a story about two boys. Dante, who is kind of from a black British background, and he is a poetry-loving nerd.
Classic.
In a duffel coat. Do you know it's called a duffel coat? It's nothing to do with the buttons. It's the town in Belgium where that type of cloth is made.
Shut up.
A duffel coat when I was young, in this era, was very much a nerd uniform.
What were cool guys wearing coat-wise?
Parka coat.
A cool guy wore a parka puffy.
Although not with the hood up.
What did that say, thug?
No, you just look like one of those vacuum cleaner attachments that you use for cleaning the walls with. Do you feel that the different attachments of the vacuum cleaner play less of a part in modern cleaning than they once did?
No, I think you just don't live with your mom anymore.
So that's Dante. And then the other boy, who from the first episode it appears is going to be one of the two main characters, is Barden. Now, he's from an Irish background. He dances. He sings like an angel. Oh. But will he give in to pressure from his dad to become involved with the IRA?
Oh, shit.
How will their lives intersect, these two boys? Now, this question is only partially answered in episode one, which is all I've seen so far. But I know where it's going because I've seen the trailer. Mm-hmm. They're going to form a band.
You love when kids form a band.
Well, I do and I don't, because I think band origin stories on screen are rarely good.
What are people getting wrong?
I'll tell you what it is. It's the moments when inspiration strike. So a few years ago, we went to see Sunny Afternoon, which is a musical built around the Kinks song catalogue.
My parents were in town.
And there's some point in which the guitar's distorting because something isn't working properly. Uh-huh. And it's like, da-na-na-na-na. Hang on a minute, what did you just play? And it's whatever that is, whatever that moment is, you just see too often.
How old are these kids?
Dante is definitely of school age, but he looks about 20. So I'm guessing he's sixth form. The girl that Dante is pining for works in a record shop. What?
If this woman is sexy because she likes music, I'm going to riot.
No,
I'm going to
no,
fucking riot.
No. like the riots in Coventry in 1980.
Yeah, those are the riots I'm going to do. We've asked people, like, what cliches make you insane? I'm identifying mine. It's female romantic objects who are given a personality through their love of music and books.
That is not what is happening in this show. You're just projecting that onto it. I mentioned it because he goes and hangs around in the record shop just to be near her. And that is a familiar situation to me, not with a record shop, but with the local branch of McDonald's in Macclesfield, where a girl I had a crush on, Nicola Bamford, had a part-time job. So I would go in there. I would buy the cheapest thing on the menu, which was a carton of milk for 35 pence. Mm-hmm. And then I would nurse that for a long time, hoping that she would come out with the mop and mop up around me.
Did she ever?
She did, but then she had a friend of hers have a word with me and ask me, will you stop going and drinking milk in McDonald's while Nicola mops up? Which is right. I was probably making her feel uncomfortable.
Oh, honey, I'm sorry that happened to you.
So what do I want to say about This Town? It is going to play out as a band origin story, it seems, but it's just better than that sounds. I think it is a serious, weighty social drama, and there's going to be all these different moving parts converging against the backdrop of the Coventry music scene in the early 80s. And it does feel like there's a lot of ground being laid in episode one. So occasionally it can feel like you're working hard as a viewer, but I think this might be something that we will come back to. Do you know what I would like to see? Mm-hmm. A smile on my wife's face when she logs into the email and sees a full inbox. That is what brings me happiness.
That is what brings me happiness, darling.
So we could do concert films?
Oh, yeah, that's very good. I'd love to know what concert films I should watch.
Also, have you ever been in a stampede at a concert and they've paid you off to keep quiet about it? We'll preserve your anonymity. Hugely talented, brilliant performers who, if they don't have the right prop, like Taylor Swift and the guitar, it all falls apart very quickly. Mm-hmm. What about this? A show that you never gave a chance to because of the person recommending it to you. Inspired by me never having seen Peaky Blinders because of this annoying barber.
Oh, sure. Of course. Good.
Good examples of a band origin show. And anything for me personally in the realm of bleak 80s in the UK. Plus your recommendations, please. The email address is...
fuckoff@firecrotchandnormcore.com. Okay, listen, you've got to join the Patreon. I'll tell you why. I got to get Beachbody ready. Okay? I go to a real piece of shit gym. I could go to a better gym if more of you joined the Patreon, but really to kick my ass in gear the way that I truly deserve, I need a personal trainer. Do you know how far away I am from being able to afford a personal trainer?
You could probably do an annual session with a personal trainer.
I worked with a personal trainer in like 2008, and there was a plot twist where it turned out he was also like a male stripper. One of the greatest moments of my life.
How did it come up?
He was so bad at his fucking job. Like, he was in amazing shape, but he was terrible at what the job was. And so one time I was like, what do you do when you're not doing this? And he's like, I dance a little. And I'm like, press pause. You dance a little? And he's like, yeah, I do. Like, and I was like, you strip? And he's like, yeah, so I do.
You went straight in there with the strip?
100%.
You just had a feeling that he wasn't in the ballet?
Oh, yeah. I want a personal trainer. I need to get my nails done again. Jeff and Jean bought me a bathing suit for Mother's Day, so I don't need another bathing suit. By the way, the bathing suit they got me is so sexual, I don't know what to do with it.
Can I just say, in my defense, I didn't say to our son, let's get your mum a sexy bathing suit for Mother's Day. What it was is you had been shopping with a friend, and I said to her, did Sarah see anything that she liked? And she couldn't remember anything apart from the swimsuit.
So you guys bought me a gold swimsuit, so I'm going to parade around in that in front of my husband and my son on some beach holiday that we have yet to take. So do you want my body to look good in the sexual bathing suit that my husband and my son purchased for me for Mother's Day? Help me find a personal trainer.
Can you talk to me about the cadence that is starting to emerge?
I don't know. Let's not think about it too much. Join our Patreon. I need your money. Look. Here's what you're going to get. You get our watch list. So fucking helpful. You get bonus interviews. You get these minimum 40, maximum an hour and 10 minute interviews where we are just talking. Are you interested in writing? Are you interested in screenwriting? Then these are for you. Finally, I voice note you. Finally, my mother sends you a birthday video. We work for free if you don't Patreon.
Patreon.com/theyliketowatch. And coming up later, our guest is the showrunner of Narcos on Netflix, also of Griselda, which came out earlier this year, starring Sofia Vergara. It's about an infamous drug lord.
Is she still a drug lord?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know why that is. In the House of Lords, you're a lady or a baroness. Drugs baroness sounds good, doesn't it?
Yes, but I love the gender neutrality of it all.
Yeah. I always found it weird in the Bible that God would insist on being called Lord. Out of all the titles.
Why Lord?
Yeah.
He's weird. Like, God, if he exists, is not normal.
But they built in a caveat, didn't they? That the Lord moves in mysterious ways. So sure. Your mortal mind can't comprehend why a deity would insist on everyone calling him Lord. Later, our guest is Hollywood producer and showrunner Eric Newman.
Hello, Newman.
This week, the thing we watched together was Renegade Nell. Now, this is a new series on Disney Plus, and it's about Highway Woman. And the thing that's special about her is she has supernatural powers. She's very strong. She can catch bullets in her fingers. And here is what is confusing to me. that sounds like it should be terrible, mm-hmm. but I'm really enjoying it.
So you said Sally Wainwright has a new thing. And I went, oh my God, whatever it's going to be, it's going to have to be brilliant.
And this is Sally Wainwright, who is one of Britain's most revered screenwriters. She did Happy Valley.
And we'll never get her. There are two writers I've been told don't even put their name in your mouth. You will never speak to them. And it is Sally Wainwright and Tony Roche.
And this is more similar to her series Gentleman Jack, which was about a lesbian in the 19th century based on some real diaries. And we both love that. And I would say that changed my relationship to period dramas. I liked it so much.
That's how good I think Sally Wainwright is. Because I went, oh my God, Sally Wainwright. And then I saw, oh, period piece. I went, And then I went, wait, there's a supernatural element. I'm going to hate it. And then it started. And I don't know what's going on. But I really, really, really like it very, very much.
I think what's going on is pace.
Uh-huh.
Sense of humor, even though it's a drama. But more than anything, as with Gentleman Jack, it is a lead character who is so compelling. And not just in the way they're written, but in the way they're performed. So this is Nell, and she's played by Louisa Harland from Derry Girls. And she's just brilliant.
She's unbelievable.
So very close to the beginning, we see Nell hold up a stagecoach. And you said to me, oh, so is that what highwaymen did? So up until that point, what did you think a highwayman did?
Adam Ant.
He did a song about being a dandy highwayman. Yeah.
And I know that song a little bit. And then I know about Dick Turpin, but only because of Horrible Histories. And so I guess I thought there was just one. And it was Adam Ant and Dick Turpin, which is the same thing. And they like were a little bit sexy and naughty, but there was like some kind of Robin Hood component. But now I'm thinking maybe that's not right.
No, I think they were like carjackers. But I guess they became folk heroes because they were robbing people who could afford to swan around in stagecoaches.
Okay, so there's something about my Robin Hood connection here that's not completely off.
They were robbing from the rich.
But they don't give to the poor.
Yeah, and then keeping it, not giving
that's
it to the
fine.
Poor.
That's fine.
And their catchphrase supposedly is stand and deliver.
And would they actually say stand and deliver your money or your life?
I'm wondering if really that is an idea we have more from Adamant than history itself. Because I think if you were really pumped up and about to rob a stagecoach, I don't think you're centered enough to wheel out a catchphrase.
Right.
Like if I think about what a mugging looks like, it's somebody who's got themselves really worked up. Mm-hmm. Like, give us your fucking money. Give us your phone and your credit cards.
Yeah, so it's like that, but it's stand and deliver.
Yeah. Stand and fucking deliver.
It's so much more refined.
I knew this Swedish woman once, and her brother was mugged outside of his house very early in the morning. So he's leaving his house to get a taxi to go to the airport. He came out of his house, the taxi wasn't there, but there were two ruffians who said, give us your fucking phone and your credit cards. And being a certain type of Swede, he went, no, I'm about to go on a business trip to Munich and I will be needing them. At which point one of them ran off. So he's just left.
Oh my God.
Left with one. And this guy goes, get your fucking phone now. He says, no, I will not give you my phone. I've explained this already. But what do you need? Maybe you need some money for something. So I can give you, give us 50 quid. He says, no, I have 30. I will give you £30. And the guy just goes, all right then. And then took the 30 quid and ran off.
Oh, Scandinavia.
This show, it's set in Tottenham, early 18th century. Of course, Tottenham now is an area of North London. But back then, it was a country village. And I think there are probably people who will see this and think, how sad that the urban sprawl has claimed a quaint village. Whereas I just think it's better now.
Undoubtedly. I hate a village. Ugh.
Me too.
Gross.
A watermill. Nice to look at, but I would rather have a Costa.
Yeah.
I don't think there is anything man-made in the countryside that even comes close to that shop flying tiger that we have in the city. Like, think about the things they have in a village. There's a blacksmith, a tanner, maybe a farrier?
I don't know what that is.
It's to do with horses. But my point is, you go into one of these flying tigers, it's like the bit at the end of IKEA, crossed with lots of wonderful novelty items. And there's just nothing as good in a village as that.
No.
You've said before on the podcast that the English countryside isn't really your thing.
No, I don't give a shit. I think it's gross.
And this is somewhat surprising to me because with a certain amount of regularity, you will have a gig. And they'll say, wait, where's your show tonight, Sarah? And you'll say, Swindon. And then you will call me and you've arrived in, say, Swindon. And it turns out that the gig is in some village 7 miles outside of Swindon. But because you are tight, instead of taking a taxi, you're quite often calling me from a country road where you're a woman walking alone at dusk.
There was one time, it was like somewhere outside of Cambridge, and it took me through a field at night. And I thought, City Mapper needs to say to a woman, just so you know, you're going through a field and you could die.
Do you think possibly you should be using not City Mapper, but Country Mapper?
Is that a real thing?
It should be.
Yes, I think I should be using Country Mapper. So I did this gig a few months ago, and it said it was like very, very, very doable, like a 25-minute walk. I thought, oh, great. And I'm walking and I'm walking. And it takes me like over what looked like an unused railway. And I thought, oh, I seem to be heading in a strange direction, but this whole thing is 25 minutes. Like nothing too dramatic can happen. And I don't know how it unfolded exactly, but the next thing I knew, I was in a pitch black thicket.
Was it a starry night? Were you able to navigate by the stars?
I was not able to navigate by the stars. And I do know I heard once that, like, if you are ever attacked, you're supposed to wee on them or try to shit on them. Or you're supposed to say, I've also thought that I
think this might have been bad advice.
It might have been, but that's always been a thing.
The angle.
I don't know, but I've been told, this is my, I mean, I don't think attack on women is funny. I'm just saying that my strategy is that I would try to urinate or shit onto them, or I would tell them that I loved them.
Oh, I see.
And so then I look at my map and I can tell I'm not getting out of the woods anytime soon. So I call you and I'm completely panicked and you do the find my iPhone feature. So then you say, Sarah, keep walking, keep talking. You're going to get to a main road.
When this happens, I always feel like, you know, you're watching a spy film and there's someone in the field and then there's someone else at HQ with a headset. that I am often remotely navigating train timetables for you in the same that way that somebody at Spy HQ is coordinating a helicopter.
Yes, that happens a lot.
Here's a thought. You know, if you've got a sat-nav in a car, you can set it to avoid roads where you have to pay a toll or avoid motorways. Why don't you set your walking route to avoid stiles and kissing gates and cattle grids?
I would very happily scale a stile.
Let's talk about the supernatural element in Renegade Nell. So what it is she has powers that have been given to her by a little sprite played by Nick Mohammed from Ted Lasso. And when I say little sprite, I want you to think about Kylie Minogue in Moulin Rouge. Or Tinkerbell. A tiny little flying thing.
Yes.
Did it make you wish you had one of those?
I'm already trying to not talk to myself out loud in most public situations. And I'm already like almost always talking to a sprite. So if there's actually a sprite, I'd be so screwed.
Just to run through some of the other people in it, Craig Parkinson, who we love.
What a tall drink of water.
Adrian Lester, who I think people know from lots of things, but especially Hustle. He plays a malevolent force in this show. Oh, and the other person I was going to say is in it is Pip Torrens. And I mentioned him because he was Peter Munyans in Succession.
Did not recognize him until at the end you said Pip Torrens.
So let's try and summarize Renegade now. I think it is a Sally Wainwright palate cleanser rather than her next big thing.
What can you possibly do after you've done Happy Valley? Shake it off. Shake it off. She shakes it off. And how better to shake it off than a supernatural element? She had to go so cuckoo pants other direction. She went period. She went supernatural. She's throwing everything at it. And that sounds like it should be bad. And it really feels quite fun.
Listen, I know Sarah has already said this is futile, but do you know Sally Wainwright? Could you intercede on our behalf?
And could you convince her of us? I'm sure that you can't.
Also, what about recommendations of supernatural shows for people who really don't like anything supernatural?
Just watch the film Ghostbusters. The 1980s one.
Yeah, not any of the new ones. And period drama for people who don't like period drama.
Gentleman Jack feels really hard to beat in that regard.
It really does. And your recommendations, please. The email address is...
fuckoff@firecrotchandnormcore.com.
And coming up next, we are delighted that we have showrunner extraordinaire. Is he extraordinaire?
He is an extraordinaire.
Showrunner of Narcos and Griselda, which is on Netflix now. It's Eric Newman. Now, you might think this is some kind of ad or sponsorship, but it isn't. It is a little Nepo-friendly interlude where we tell you about a book that our friend Tom Selinsky has written.
But if you are some kind of brand manager or you've got connections, I just want you to listen to how good I am at selling the fucking shit out of this.
This is genuinely a great idea. Tom is this science fiction fan who realized that he had this huge Star Trek-shaped gap in his knowledge. And so he decided to watch every single TV series and film spin-off and then write about what he saw. And this is the first part, from the original series to the end of Enterprise.
Can I just put my cards on the table and say, I don't give a shit about Star Trek. So this is the worst possible book for me to ever have to read. But Tom, if I may say, has such a wonderful way with words. And it's so also about a journey that he goes on. So, you know, it's like you can be not a sports person, but then you watch Last Dance and you're like, wait, I'm not a sports person, but this is amazing. This thing is still for you.
Because in a way, it's about TV as much as it's about Star Trek.
Obviously, if you are a goddamn nerd, you're going to love it more than us cool kids. But even as a cool kid, there is a journey and just wonderful insight about television nestled in there for you as well.
The book is called Star Trek, Discovering the TV Series by Tom Selinsky.
Go get it. If you got a friend in your life who is a nerdy, there's no question in your mind that this is their next gift. It's available where all books are sold.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Did you guys live together or you just work together?
We're a married couple and we work together.
Yeah, how cool.
Do you bring your work home with you?
No. My wife is, she is too honest with me. I know that if I show her something that's finished and she tells me it's great, like Griselda, she loved. I showed her Griselda and I would say it was probably the best viewing experience I've had with her, where she couldn't wait to watch another and another and another. I don't always get that. If I show her something too early, she'll get in my head in a way where I think doing this job, you have to have the courage of your conviction. You have to think you're going in the right direction. And obviously I'm always open to notes, but my wife's notes tend to be much more like, why are you doing that? Or like, really? One of the first screenings of anything we ever had, I took her to a premiere. I can't remember what movie it was. It was that long ago. But in the premiere screening, she had an audible, exasperated, like, really? Like, at the movie. And I'm like, surrounded by the people I made the movie with. And she goes like, and I go, you cannot do that. You have to understand, like, and she's like, okay, got it. I just have to get her at the right time. I've done the movie preview thing so many times, more than I can count. And no matter how clear you are with your audience that, because you're watching an unfinished film or television show, and you can explain to them a million different ways that, okay, no, I know you're going to see at some point a tennis ball on a stick. That's going to be a dragon. I know that it looks, it's a tennis ball on a stick. We're going to do the visual effects. It's going to be a dragon. And no matter how clear you are, when you get the cards at the end of the preview, you have this big box of cards where everyone wrote their comments. 20% of them will say, what was it with the tennis ball on the stick? Like, that's crazy. Like, and my wife has a little bit of that where it's like, that's not how it's going to be when it's done. She's my loudest critic and my most trustworthy critic.
I want to ask you some questions about the origin of Griselda. So am I right in thinking that initially Sofia Vergara, did she approach you with the idea of wanting to do something about Griselda Blanco?
Yes. And that was in 2015. So I was in the midst of, I want to say, Narcos season 3. And I got a call that Sofia was interested in talking to me about Griselda Blanco. And I knew instantly, I mean, obviously I knew who Sofia was, but I also knew fairly intimately who Griselda Blanco was, because she'd come up in my research dozens of times as a satellite member of the Medellin cartel, which was the Pablo Escobar, Ochoa. She was the Miami part of it, and she was on the receiving end of these deliveries at a time when that part of Florida was so porous that most of the coke in North America was coming through there before they kind of cracked down on it. And she was a fascinating character. I had always wanted to integrate her into the Narcos universe, but I think the challenge with her always was that she was just too good a character to relegate to like a B story or even a B plus story. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad I never figured out a way to do it, because it allowed us to establish a Griselda who was wholly Sophia's.
Can I ask you, since the success of Narcos, is talent wanting to meet with you and talk about ideas? Is that part of everyday life for you now?
Yes.
And what is the ratio of good ideas to bad ideas that you hear?
I've never thought of it in terms of good ideas, bad ideas. If Sophia had come to me and said, I want to play George Washington, I might have thought it was a strange idea. But if you think about it, there's a wonderful execution for any bad idea. You can have an insane idea that in the right hands becomes spectacular. So someone comes to me and says, I want to do a musical version of Schindler's List. I would think, I don't know that I could do that, but there's somebody who could maybe do it. What I'm finding I like in terms of the jobs that I do, I did a show called True Story with Kevin Hart for Netflix. And I thought, for me, I was making a version of Frank Sinatra Has a Cold. Do you guys know, have you ever heard of that magazine article before? So Gay Talese, and I think this must have been 69, 70 maybe, he gets assigned by Esquire magazine to go write a piece about Frank Sinatra. And he shows up and gets the runaround for days from Frank Sinatra Incorporated. But it's like, I'm supposed, Frank's going to be here, Frank's going to be there, sorry, Frank's this, sorry, Frank's that. Frank Has a Cold, which is what he ended up titling the article, Frank Sinatra Has a Cold. And what the article he writes, never sitting down with Sinatra, is about celebrity in a way that it redefines celebrity journalism. It wasn't the puff piece that had been written for 60 years prior. It was an honest look at a guy who was maybe by no fault of his own kind of an asshole, but certainly a narcissist. And so I did this show called True Story with Kevin Hart, where it's kind of about Kevin. It's sort of a black comedy and a bit of a thriller. It's about a guy who believes that because he's funny and touches people and makes people laugh, he should get away with murder. And for Kevin, he was in from, I would go over to his house and I'd write something and hand it to him, and he'd read it and hand it back to me. And it was like this great process. And I had similar process with Sofia Vergara on Griselda. Some actors will take a producing credit on something they don't have anything to do with. She really produced this show with me, 100%. And I'm having the same experience with Robert De Niro on Zero Day, which is my new show. You know, I had dinner with Bob, as you call him, if you know him.
You're at the Bob stage.
Wow.
I'm at the Bob stage. I think only Marty Scorsese calls him Bobby. But like, he's from the very beginning, he was involved in everything, read everything immediately, like, I've, you know, constant back and forth. And I love that. And I believe that if the people, whether they have the idea or they embrace the idea, if they're willing to work that hard, you can accomplish anything. You can make what appears to be a terrible idea a success.
How did you know that Sofia Vergara had those acting chops? How did you know that she'd be good at this kind of project?
I think two things. One is precedent, obviously. You know, Tom Hanks, the first time I ever saw Tom Hanks was on Bosom Buddies. Robin Williams, the first time I ever saw Robin Williams. These are incredible dramatic actors, they proved to be. Somebody like Emma Stone, the first time I ever saw Emma Stone was in Easy A. Like, comedy is so hard. There's the Edmund Gwynne line that dying is easy, comedy is hard, you know, which he said on his deathbed. So I think that if you can do comedy, there's a good chance you can do anything. Adam Sandler has done some great dramatic stuff. The other thing that I was convinced of was her conviction that she had to do this. I believe that it was that she was compelled to try that, which I think was scary to her. You know, anytime you leave your comfort zone, it's a little scary, and she was willing to do it. And I think it worked perfectly.
So do you think the project you're doing with Bob is going to show people that he's got range?
I don't know that that can happen. I think he's already been written off. It's funny. I'll tell you what I do say, Jeff, all the time to other, I mean, everyone on the cast, from Jesse Plemons to Matthew Modine to, you know, and less Angela Bassett. But I'll say to them, like, that's Robert De Niro. Can you believe that we just did 5 minutes with Robert De Niro? Like, yeah. It's sort of amazing. It's unique.
Someone like a Jesse Plemons or a Matthew Modine, how long do they need to be normal around Bob?
I think I have an answer. A day. I think everybody gets one day of like, holy shit, I'm opposite Robert De Niro. And then it all settles in. They're all such professionals. And they've all also done theater, which must be terrifying.
More terrifying than Bob.
Can I actually, I heard an interview where you were saying on Narcos with, I think seasons, but maybe even specific stories, you'd have these films as points of reference for tone. And I heard you specifically reference Downfall, the great film about the last days of Adolf Hitler, thing that informed season two of Narcos. Was there something that informed the tone of Griselda?
I'll tell you, Cassavetes for sure. Gloria and the Jenna Rowland stuff that he did, where there was a beauty and a ferocity to her. I think obviously Scarface, just in terms of the era. I like to think about Scarface as the very weird world that a grounded character in the form of this woman with kids and bills to pay and trauma was coming into this with all the sensitivities and subtleness of the Scarface world. And I always think about when I do these sort of crime things, Jean-Pierre Melville, you know, like I love Le Doulos and Le Samurai and these sort of French New Wave gangster stories where the good guys are the bad guys, kind of, you know, or the bad guys are the good guys in a way where they have a code and they have an integrity. You know, particularly Andy and Doug and myself were huge fans of global cinema and television throughout time. So, yeah, I do love that kind of modeling thing. And Downfall, yeah, I remember thinking the power of Downfall is you're so in that moment that you forget who they are. You forget that this is Hitler and Goebbels. But you're like, God, that sucks. And it's not like you're rooting for them to get away, but it does that thing to you where you're like, oh yeah, God, kids are there and that sucks. In the same way Pablo Escobar, you forget that this guy, if anyone needs to die, it's this guy, you know?
You know that Pablo Escobar quote that you start episode one with on the screen, which I think was a clever way of bringing Narcos fans through. I'm going to mangle it here, but it's along the lines of, I only met one man I was ever scared of, and that man was Brazil. Yeah.
The only man I ever feared was, I made that up. It did not, he never said that. But I had read in a couple different places that her unpredictability worried him. And I think it did a lot of people. I think you didn't know what she was going to do. And I think that a woman is so deeply anomalistic in this world. It's so rare to see and difficult to understand for these guys who ran almost entirely on machismo. I mean, this was the most male-dominated business in one of the most male-dominated societies on Earth. To try to contemplate, wait a minute, there's a woman in Miami who is in charge and she's killed a bunch of guys. And what grew out of that, which served us in our storytelling, was she needs to be misunderstood for these people to understand her. Like they're not going to look at her and think, oh, maybe she's just really smart and maybe she's capable of a violence that no, she has to be a demon. She has to be the devil to have done this. And it all kind of returns back to a badass woman is a bitch and a badass man is a boss.
Can I ask you about the real life June Hawkins? She's the cop who arrested Griselda, but real life June Hawkins you had on your show as a consultant.
Yes.
Can you talk to me about what that looks like in practical terms? Is she in the writer's room with you?
She kept coming up in our reading because she was a big player in this federal task force formed between local law enforcement and the feds. And Griselda was very much a target of her investigation. And we tracked her down. Her son was a cop. At the time, he may have still been a cop. And so we got to her through him. And in talking to her, we sort of realized she's having a very similar experience to Griselda. She comes to Miami in the 70s. She's a single mom. of Latin descent. She joins this incredibly male-dominated institution, the Miami Police Department, law enforcement, and she is mistreated and underestimated, and yet she becomes a key figure in thinking what no one else is thinking, which is like, this is a woman. This is not a man in charge of this thing, which was unfathomable to, it's kind of what made it a perfect crime, the fact that no one suspected a woman could do this mm-hmm. stuff. So June was invaluable. We got a tremendous amount of information from her. She never made it out to the writer's room, but she didn't need to.
What is your overall experience with people seeing a fictionalized version of themselves on screen?
I've never had it go poorly. Most people are pretty humble about it. I've had some people come in and I've watched them watch it, and I've had them say to me like, wow, that's exactly how it happened, even though I made up whole sequences that never happens. You know, I think we've endeavored to be pretty honest about these people, what they do, what they didn't do. And there are obviously some things I wouldn't feel comfortable misrepresenting. Obviously, collaborating with the cops if you haven't. I think masculinity stuff, I think you have to be very careful about casting aspersions or making any claims about someone's sexuality. I mean, I think it gets a little, those two areas for me where I sort of stay. You know, Pacho Herrera he's dead, but he was outwardly gay. I would say Pacho Herrera is my favorite character in all of the Narcos universe. And Alberto Amon is in every season of Narcos. And he's in Griselda. He plays her husband, who she murders in the first episode. I love him so much.
I need to ask you a non-Griselda question. I need to know a little bit about your first job on Wayne's World. It is possibly my favorite movie ever
yes.
made.
God, it was 35 years ago, I think. It's probably like, what is the year?
It came out in 91. I mean, that's when it came out. So you were working on it in something like 1990,
maybe? Yeah, so we made it in 90. So, yeah, so it's funny because we shot in L.A. And I actually had a really good thing with Mike Myers, who I loved. There was one joke that I gave him that he put in the movie. And I was so thrilled. I was like 21 years old. I was 20 years old. And I had one line and I said this thing. And he's like, that's good. And he used it. And it was a thrill. I'm still sort
which
of
line?
We
line? We want to know
can
which
you
line.
Remember what line?
Oh, it's not very funny, but he was telling Tia Carrera, like, are you still going to love me when I'm this, when I'm that? And then I made a Beatles joke. I said, are you still going to love me when I'm hanging out with Ravi Shankar, you know, in an ashram, whatever. And he's like, that's good. And he used it. I was like, oh, wow. And by the way, it's, you know, the least funny thing in the whole movie, but I was so like, wow, you like, that's cool. Can also remember we ordered Burger King one night. We're on set. We're doing shooting nights. And I remember Lorne sitting on the floor of this, you know, like we'd taken over this little strip mall. We're in this like closed video store, but we're all sitting on the floor eating Burger King. And I said, Lorne, have you ever had Burger King? Is this the first Burger King you've ever had in your life? Because Lorne is, you know, he's a prince. It's Lorne Michaels. And he proceeded to tell me every single fast food, he knew the names of like Carl's Jr. makes a Whopper. These guys make a Big Mac. These McDonald's is, he just knew it all. Like he had like, it was really funny. Anyway.
Is comedy, are you really a frustrated comedy nerd? Is it something you'd ever go back to?
No. You know, it's funny. I like it, but I don't think it's what I'm good at. Great. I don't know what I'm great at, but I don't know that I'm great at good enough at it to do it. There are a few comedies that I love, the sort of structurally perfect Groundhog Day. I'll tell you my favorite comedy maybe of the last 25 years is Talladega Nights. That's a brilliant movie. And by the way, if you took the jokes out of it, oh my God, if you took the jokes out of it, it would be Days of Thunder. I think any movie that I'm going to love, comedy or not, it would have to work in that kind of character-based structural way without the jokes.
We always want to know what people are watching. So you're a big film buff. Is the television that you're watching at the moment too?
Yes. I just finished One Day, which I loved.
Did you cry?
Which is on Netflix. Yeah, I got close. It's funny, you know, my wife remembered she had read the book while we're watching the show. And so I had a feeling something bad was going to happen. I just didn't know what. I'm watching Shogun and I love it. I will always dip back into the Bureau and we'll rave about it anytime, like any chance I get. It's now many years old, but it's, I think it's one of the best shows that's been made. It's so good. I love it.
Eric Newman, didn't you just feel like you were in the presence of a real LA player, a mover and a shaker in the television industry?
I felt like, where am I? Chateau Marmont?
Exactly.
I want to say, of course, my big takeaway was that if you can do comedy, you can do anything. Do you think I can do anything? Do you think I could be an incredible actor and I just don't know it yet?
I'm not sure that you have range.
No.
But somebody could use that note in some way. I'm convinced of it, Sarah.
Can I say something? Robin Williams, RIP, truly, forever in our hearts, truly. But did he have range? I felt he has beard and no beard. And that is the range.
Yes, yes. I'm not sure that Jerry Seinfeld, who I consider...
Oh, Jesus, I'm so fucking
worried. One of the greats.
Oh, my God.
I am not sure that he is showing range in the trailer for the new Pop-Tarts movie, Unfrosted.
We watched the trailer for the new Pop-Tarts film. It looks so bad. It was astonishing.
I'm just hoping it's a bad trailer. Anyway, thank you to Eric Newman. And I would like just some credit for not asking him about his dad, Randy Newman.
We both deserve, especially you, a huge pat on the back.
Thank you. Thank you.
Our first email comes from Joanne, who writes, Dear FC and NC, I was interested to hear the doc Three Salons at the Seaside being recommended and would like to suggest the parody of that doc featuring Kate Blanchett.
What?
And your friend, Harriet Walter.
What?
Called Two Hairdressers in Bagleyport. It's part of the Documentary Now series and also features an appearance by Fred Armisen as the postie. Am I saying that right? Posty or postie?
You'd say postie. Oh, that makes sense. I didn't know that they'd parodied what I would have thought of was quite an obscure British TV documentary. Do you know, I've never watched any of these. And every time I hear about them, I think I must watch that. Your brother is a big fan, isn't he?
Yes. Oh, do you know one of my favorite things is the divorce that happened between Fred Armisen and his wife, whose name I'm forgetting.
But oh, she from was Mad Men.
In Mad Men. And she was so candid with how crazy it was to be married to him. And it was just one of my favorite things that ever happened. It was written by Seth Meyers. And Blanchett suggested making the parody after seeing the original on iPlayer. I don't like Seth Meyers. I'm so, so, so sorry. I actively don't engage with his work as an issue that I have.
I think he seems nice and he seems funny. But I think what you and maybe me as well hold against him is there was a period when those late night talk shows were in churn and they were going to announce new hosts. And you think, oh, finally, they're going to give one of these things to a woman. And then it's Seth Meyers. I think you hold that against him. I don't think it's the work.
It was that plus I felt I heard an excerpt, which means I didn't watch the whole thing, but I've heard clips of like a stand-up hour that he did. And I really, really take issue with the way he talks about his wife and the way he talks about being a father.
What, was he disrespecting his wife and child?
No, as it turns out, she's this amazing wife. She's really amazing. And there's I just think that when people talk about the chaos of raising small children, when men who have full-time jobs, and I'm not talking 9-to-5 shit, I'm talking they work 16 hours a day or fucking 18 hours a day, and then they say this stuff like, but when I'm home, I'm really home. May I suggest to you, watch out for men who go, but when I'm home, I'm really home. Like, I leave my... Fuck you. That is a code for never being around your family. Now, I actually don't care if you're around your family. I don't care. But I care if you try and talk about this unbelievably consuming job and then also about being a family man. And it's amazing and the kids are all in bed and it's chaos, but we love it. No, that is an incredibly horrible part of a life and a very difficult one. And there's just a whole way talking. He's like sobbing left to right about his wife giving birth. Save that for a therapy session and your friend, motherfuckers. Is it so amazing? The number of men who have talked about how amazing their wives are for giving birth. And I wanted to say, most women you know have done that. It's not amazing. That's the whole fucking issue. It's not amazing. Keep it to yourself. What your wife was like in childbirth.
I don't think it's a niche opinion to think that childbirth is amazing.
Keep it to yourself. And if you dare mention to me that she did it naturally, I will put your head through a window pane.
Are you done with Joanne's email?
No, sorry, but I really needed, I had needed to say that about Seth Meyers, and I needed just to remind our male listeners to never, ever, ever talk about how your wife was amazing in childbirth. It's stupid and cliche. Don't do it.
I quite like him. He seems like one of the good ones to me.
You're a fucking liar. You think Seth Meyers seems like one of the good ones for real?
He seems less obsequious than some of the others and smart.
I think he's bright. I think he's smart. I think he's extremely talented. But I don't fucking like when these men talk about their wives like they're anything other than a lady who married a rich man and now doesn't have a job. And because you can't talk about her job, you talk about how I'm new. I'm not going to go off again.
I think maybe you should fact check some of this stuff before you go off.
Yeah, I probably should. She probably has a big job.
Should we check?
Yeah.
Seth Meyers, spouse, Alexi Asher. Okay. All right, I've looked her up. I mean, she's just a human rights lawyer.
Is she still working?
She joined the board of directors of Human Rights First in January of 2018.
Okay.
she works in as a director of anti-trafficking policy.
All right. Okay, so that's cool that she does that.
So we're going to get a full-throated retraction now.
I'll do a partial retraction. Seth, I apologize and I accept that some of this is about my baggage and I'm really, really sorry that I just directed some stuff at you that you didn't deserve. But what I would like to stand by is don't talk about how she's great. Just don't fucking do it.
All right. Well, while you're tucking into that humble pie. Yeah. We have this from Kate, who says, "Hi, FC and NC. I have an inability to ignore wigs in TV or film. Bad wigs can make something unwatchable, but even good ones are a distraction from the illusion that the show is trying to create. Wigs don't bother me so much if it's a fantasy world, like House of Dragon, or in some historical dramas where wigs would be worn anyway. But it's the wigs that look like someone's real hair that really bother me. See Julia Louis-Dreyfus in Veep."
Huh, I've never noticed that.
"It's usually the hairline that doesn't look right, too straight and perfect. And if the actor is bald in real life, the wig rarely looks convincing. Mark Strong has been put in a lot of bad wigs over the years. I admit if a wig is really good, I wouldn't notice it, so kudos to them. Also, bad old age makeup is another distraction." I completely agree. I am distracted by a bad wig, but especially by the aging
prosthetics. I might be
prosthetics.
At a stage with films where I won't go see something if they do aging prosthetics. I hate it so much.
Kate says, "Don't get me started on that." Bye.
Bye, Kate. This next one comes from Josh Cullimore. "Dear Sarah and Jeff, I just watched the most beautiful documentary called Madu on Disney Plus about a teenage boy in Nigeria whose dancing is spotted on social media. Shut up. And who gets a scholarship at a ballet school in London. Oh my God, it's already what I'm going to watch next week. I highly recommend if you fancy watching a real-life Nigerian Billy Elliot. Yes, I do. But have some tissues ready. I was on the cross trainer in the gym. If anything happens to this kid's family, I'm going to fucking riot again." Oh my God. So it's battling to keep the tears back. That's so funny when you wind up watching serious stuff at the gym. Jeff doesn't get it, but I haven't watched TV at the gym in fucking 20 years. "There are the struggles of leaving your family and culture behind. Culture, I can manage. Family, oy.
That's because your culture follows you everywhere.
I know. Can't relate, so I don't care. Finding your identity, making friends, and dealing with a potential disability with the addition of dancing. Sarah, I feel it might be made for you. Josh, you get me. Yes, it is. Happy Easter. All the best. I'm going to watch this. I cannot wait."
Send us your recommendations and observations and rebuttals, please. The email address is
fuckoff@firecrotchandnormcore.com.
This week, Eric Newman liked to watch One Day on Netflix and Shogun, which is on Disney Plus here in FX and Hulu in the States, and The Bureau, which is on AMC Plus through Apple TV. Sarah watched The Eras Tour on Disney Plus. I watched This Town on BBC iPlayer, and we like to watch Renegade Nell on Disney Plus.
No, just kidding. Easter has gone. Easter has come and gone. You're back at work. Is the springtime coming? Right now, at this very moment, it feels like springtime is coming. Here's what I would encourage you to do. I saw some unbelievably satisfying tulips over the weekend. time of year for a great tulip. So you're not going to say it should be warm by now. You're not going to focus on the negative. You're going to go, oh, look at that rich tulip. You're going to be present with that one tulip and the one glorious day that we get across the next week. Have a wonderful, I don't know, some people are traveling right now, right? Maybe you're on holiday. My friend is going on holiday to Barcelona. Fuck her.
When is spring break?
Right about now.
Spring break!
Spring break! I never went on one! My parents wouldn't let me go! And I wouldn't have liked it anyway! Bye!